I'm Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
One thing that we don't do is Google anything. So if you tell something and then nobody can think of the name of the guy in that one show, we're never going to find out. We're just going to fuck with the audience that way. That's right. You heard me. That's what's going to happen.
That means I'm going to drop out at some point for like 13 minutes while I'm just trying to think of it and then eventually give up and come back.
That's a.
You ready for that?
That the extensive detail doesn't matter
name?
As much.
He was in the thing with Denver Pyle.
Denver Pyle.
You know.
That? Yeah, yeah. That was Gomer's much hipper cigarette smoking cousin.
Mm-hmm, it was. Mm-hmm. It was Uncle Jesse. From Full House, not from Dukes of Hazzard. How come that hasn't been a thing? How come we haven't seen like a reboot movie with both Uncle Jessies?
Ooh.
Or a series where they like, you know, wind up as roommates or something in Boston. Like fish out of water story.
Well, technically, Uncle Jesse from, what do you call it? Dukes of Hazzard would be much, much older, right?
Yeah, that would be like a fish out of water story more than anything.
Like, I mean, because it'd be like this super old man,
yeah,
and then
yeah,
a like man, another man
knows,
in
yeah.
his 40s or
beautiful
50s.
Greek
Let's
man.
Be honest, he's probably 65, but I think he's 42. But like
Willie Nelson played him in the movie. Willie Nelson was on the Jesse in the movie. They did a movie.
Yeah, in the TV show, he was even older, I think, and like yeah. bigger fat.
I imagined Willie Nelson played Uncle Jesse of Full House in the movie, and
yeah,
I was like,
course.
Wait, what?
Oh, man, like, when they do Fullest House, if they had Willie Nelson, just like come up out
Fullest
of the basement
House.
And go, hey, y'all, we're trying to have a band practice down here.
Holy crap, what happened to Jesse?
that's when too much
ripping.
That's when Mary Kate and Ashley come back. Everybody else is gone. They've died tragically in some way, and the two of them just live in the house with Willie Nelson.
I wish they would stop asking Mary Kate and Ashley to come on the show.
I prefer them making fun of it.
I wish they would do a whole season where they just like separated into two people, so there was a reason to have both of them there. Like Michelle just. Splits.
They've done that. They've had like.
Well, they had good Michelle and bad Michelle, or like the.
There
evil
was a foreign Michelle.
Foreign Michelle, right?
There was a little brunette Michelle mm-hmm. who was from.
I don't know, France, probably?
Yeah, I don't know. The kid married DJ because they walked around the table. I could. Oh,
Greece? Walking around the table makes me think of Greece. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Sure.
I feel like it might have been like a made-up country just so that they didn't offend anybody.
Yeah, just from foreign land.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, meepos.
Yeah.
But,
generic European.
This is Balky's cousin, Michelle.
Yeah, with like flags that are like no colors anybody has on their flags, you know, like teal and stuff. But yeah, there's been a foreign Michelle, a bad Michelle, there have been times where Michelle has out-of-body experiences.
Have you recently rewatched the old Full House? I know we've talked about watching the current Fuller House, but have you watched the old one? It's on like Hulu or whatever.
Yeah, I've actually. Well, yeah, and it's I can't watch it like a straight shot. Like I can't consistently watch it. I kind of pick around my favorite. Like episodes and stuff.
Oh, like you're not like binging a season. You're just watching like this one and
that
one. That
show is.
But you managed to keep up with continuity anyway.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, because like there
what
wasn't
really
much
happens.
To keep up with.
Yeah.
Like Danny
like,
gets
oh,
married,
this is,
or it doesn't.
This is the season where Comet ran around the house.
This is the one where Stephanie gets into some hijinks. Which season is that?
Oh, that Kimmy Gibbler.
Yeah.
What a pest.
You could break them up that like that, though. Like, this is, like, cigarette-smoking, bad teenage Stephanie season. Like, all the seasons kind of had, like, focuses on, like, whatever kid was contemporary enough that day.
What was your favorite very special episode?
Full House?
A Full House. Or anything.
Yeah, if another one came to your mind.
No, I think... I think the Stephanie smoking in the bathroom.
The one that you guys redid for for pilot's license?
Yeah, because it didn't get much more serious than that. dude, literally, their mother died in a car accident.
And no one ever talks about her.
Yeah, yeah. They bring that up once in the first episode. Like, she died, like, in the prime of her life in a car accident with a drunk driver that was involved a drunk driver. And that's a very special episode, is...
The first one?
No, it later...
When they deal with it?
The first one was just a gift.
One of the kids gets drunk. One of the kids gets drunk. Maybe Kimmy gets drunk. And DJ throws the whole "my mom was killed by a drunk driver" thing in her face.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Slap.
Drunk driving, big deal in the old 80s, 90s time. People talk about it a lot then. People don't really talk about it the way they did. There aren't, for I think the world at large is more lesson-y. Like, you better learn this lesson. How dare you? I can't believe you did that. Whatever. But the, art doesn't reflect that. Like, I remember in the 80s, there were all those after-school specials. Yeah. And, like, we're talking about very special episodes. There were tons of those.
And all the
PSAs.
And it
was PSAs. All just lessons. Yeah. The more you know, all that bullshit. There was so much of it just tamping it down our throat. I was like, can I tell you guys, like, legit, and I do not want to go down a tangent of this, but when I was a kid, I legit thought I was going to be molested at every turn because they kept telling me I was going to be. I was just like, is this a concern that I really have to have? And they were like, yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to, watch out. Yeah. And I was just so like,
Remember, they were like that with drug dealers. There's going to be drug dealers trying to, like, give you free drugs
just
on every
everywhere.
Corner. And, man, I had to look so hard and pay money when I wanted drugs.
It's difficult to find drugs.
Yeah, I was like, where are all these pushers that they keep warning me about?
I know. I've lived in the worst neighborhoods of many cities. They were never there.
See?
Like, first one's free. Sweet.
See, I'm looking for that, right?
Like, I never bought into those commercials because that always seemed like city shit to me. Because, like, the commercials were always set in the city.
Oh, yeah?
I'm like, yeah, like, there are dangerous men in trench coats and, you know, like, drugs and all this stuff. They are in the city, apparently, where there are sidewalks. I haven't seen a fucking sidewalk yet, and I'm like,
yeah,
eight,
there was,
you know?
There was nothing taller than three stories in the town I grew up in.
Yeah, and everything was like dirt road.
We had to go down the highway to the city.
So you guys, your theme song of childhood was "Thank God I'm a Country Boy"? That's what happened to you?
No, I think it cursed God that I was a country boy.
Yeah?
The whole time, yeah.
Yeah, you have a much more city vibe, yeah. That it comes off you.
Yeah, I'd see New York in every show and movie. Or L.A., you know, I thought L.A. was where you drive your car through big drainage ditches and shit, because every show had that stunt.
That was just where I don't think you needed a permit to film. So everywhere they kept doing it. It was like, why does everyone drive there?
Perfect Strangers, their intro in Chicago. And I went to Chicago the first time. I'm like, oh, I know that. Oh, Bob Newhart. Oh, Perfect Strangers. You know? Oh, it's like, oh, my world. This is where I should be.
That's so funny. Where did you grow up?
Outside Kansas City.
Missouri?
Town called Liberty, yeah.
I know there's two, so I just was like, wait, do I know where they are?
And neither one of them are in Kansas, right?
No, Kansas City, Kansas.
It's part of the
Kansas
City metro
Oklahoma.
Area, but Kansas City, Missouri is the big stop.
Yeah. But even though Kansas City would be considered a city, it's not? Or did you live in a suburb of it?
I lived in a suburb. It's a suburb now. It was a town outside of it then.
Yeah.
But now it's all meshed up. It touches.
Yeah, yeah.
But it used to be, you know, country and a Ford plant between us and the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
BMW back in that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Car
yeah.
people. It was very, very beneficial when I started buying beer in high school. It was just going there when the shift would change, and if they asked for my ID, say, like, I must have left it in the locker, sorry. Get you next time.
That's awesome.
Did you start rocking the beard early on?
I tried.
Yeah. Took a while to...
Yeah. I had faith. I didn't give up.
Yeah, see, that's my... See, that's... Like, I recently tried to and gave up.
Yeah.
And that was my best shot, I think. Like, that was the closest I ever came. Like, I was...
Why did you give up? I kind of liked your beard. I certainly like your mustache. When you're... Can you promise me something? When you turn 40, will you just really have a mustache? Like, for real?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Okay, thanks.
But, like, I don't know. You're having like, a mustache is hard to, like, not be creepy with. Like, I think,
you
like,
just have to let it really get bushy. Like, with, you need, like, a dad.
If I was a masculine cop.
With that
when
shirt.
You're, when
like,
you're
with that shirt,
hungry,
it's a total maybe. Raising Arizona
see,
vibe.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. See, yeah. Was,
yeah.
Yeah,
Wendell in his classic Hawaiian.
But, yeah, like, I'm really thin and pale, and my hair is just, like, it just kind of does this weird side part thing. With a mustache, I can just seem creepy.
At least you're not a redhead or blonde with a mustache. Those things don't work. Those people are just terrible people. It's the saddest part. Poor Chris would love some facial hair. He cannot do that.
See, I envy blondes, though, because when they're trying to grow facial hair out, like beards and stuff, they get a lot more, like, they get, like, covert time to do it. Like, it's not as noticeable while they're, like, growing this shitty beard. Like, the second, like, my hair's so dark that, like, it's obvious that it's there and just trying its hardest. But like just
and you feel like everybody's keeping score. Like yeah. Oh man, it's like day six.
As if anybody's looking at anybody very closely.
Poor guy.
Like the bearded guys at my job. With hey slugger, look at you. You know, like what you got going on there.
Yeah, I grew my first beard the summer after I graduated from high school. I went to the Caribbean. My best friend moved to the West Indies after 8th grade, and I went down there to see him after I graduated and spent the summer there and came back with, you know, after 3 months came back with a good 5-day growth.
West Indies for the summer, what was that like?
Fantastic.
Yeah. You're 18, you're like living the life down there. What was his, why did he live there? Like, was his family from there?
This was a long time ago, and his dad engineered the cable television systems.
Awesome.
That went throughout that part of the world.
Oh, wow.
He bounced around as a kid while his dad did it, you know, around the United States. And then pretty much everybody was hooked up at that point. And they're like, well, there's these islands, and his dad's still there.
Nice. So, wild.
Yeah. So we went down there and annoyed his dad for the entire time.
Dad's trying to have summer, and you guys are like, Dad, what you up to?
Yeah.
That's wild.
We went to St. Martin, and we would come up with schemes just to entertain ourselves. We went to St. Martin and went into a bar. Polly took in a copy of Rolling Stone or Spin or something that had REM on the cover, went in, sat down, like ordered a water or something and read his magazine. Then I would come in a couple minutes later and he would get excited and hold up the magazine and make a big deal out of it and make me sign his magazine and keep saying I was in the band and have the bartenders take his picture with me. And these are film cameras, you know, he couldn't upload it or anything. But and so they'd snap the photo and kind of wonder who I am, but half the time we'd end up getting stuff comped because they think I was famous.
That's crazy. That's so awesome.
Yeah, we're idiots abroad.
Dude, you should try that everywhere. That I actually witnessed that in Las Vegas. I don't know anything about sports, right? But I was in Las Vegas with my husband out work, and he was working and I was in a bar having lunch. And this guy walked in, and the whole bar was like, oh, 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 oh. And I was like, well, that guy is famous, I guess. And, like, he sits down, like, two seats down with his friend. And I'm alone, so I just listened to the whole situation. and figure out, glean who he is based on people coming up to him like, man, listen, I just want you to know, man, that touchdown was just... I was like, oh, I see, it's a football player, excellent. So I'm like trying to figure it out, and then somebody's like, that commercial you did for Popeyes. So I'm like, football player, it was in a Popeyes commercial, and I found him, and I was like, ha! I was like, I felt like I was solving a mystery in that moment, but it's still so not famous true. To you. Oh, who cares? I don't care who famous people are, who I meet them. That I trained myself years ago when I did theater, and famous people would show up to, like, forget that people are famous. Like, as soon as I meet a person, it's all like, I don't care that you have 6 Academy Awards, man. You're sitting on a couch next to me. I don't know what to tell you. I've always considered that part of my, like, job. As, like, because I was, like, I've always been a theater person. I've always imagined myself a theater person. I don't have an accent from Boston, where I'm from, because I was like, no, when you're in theater, you can't have an accent. So that's a thing that you do. And I always imagine, I never say anything online because I'm like, oh, I'm a famous person. Like, I can't be revealing this. So in my head, that's how it exists. I've lost how I've connected those two things.
But and I said I was going to do it. famous people, you forget they're famous. You don't worry about it.
Right. Well, it makes it easier to talk to a human being.
I learned something on my interview show. Did you see that?
Yeah,
I just brought it back.
You did. Nice. Look at you.
Yeah.
See, you have the talent too. You have the same. You have the same kind of thing. We'll all wrangle each other back.
Yeah. Because that reminded me. I waited on Roger Clemens and didn't realize it until like dessert, like a week ago, and he's important. I at least know who that is.
I don't know who that is. Is it a football player?
Baseball. Player.
Great.
Yeah.
So more important to me than football.
Yeah, Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah?
Or was.
Yeah, big baseball fan, not so much football.
Yeah.
But, like, is it more important, air quotes?
He got busted for what, gambling or...
I don't know.
Drugs?
Yeah.
I think so.
Women?
I think so. He's a gigantic man. But, yeah, I apparently was supposed to know that when he orders stuffed chicken breast, he gets 2. That's... I just should know that.
By looking.
Oh my god!
Yeah, they were like,
I love that shit.
That is, what's that one chicken breast doing there? It's like, oh shit, I didn't know that there was like, I don't know, what, is it gonna eat my arm?
You know you could have just ordered that.
I don't know, if he throws it at you, it's gonna hurt. The guy's got a wicked fastball.
With like one Clemens serving of chicken. Which is 2 of them. 2 whole chickens.
Did you, like, go back into the kitchen and the chef was all like, why didn't you tell me it was him? Clearly I would have made 2! Is that how you found
kinda,
out?
Kinda. Because he was just, like, at a big party, but, like, he was, like, the main guest or whatever. And
but you didn't know.
I didn't know. I don't give a shit. I got really mad because it was, like, the night before, it was, like, it said I waited on the celebrity dinner that was a bunch of football players. And I was like, pfft. Whatever. I don't know. I got excited when it said celebrity dinner. And then it was a bunch of, people I...
That weren't celebrity to you?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I recognize...
There are so many people in this world that could be considered celebrity that actually are not contributing to my life in any way. So, part of the fun of trying to be easygoing with famous people that I do recognize is that, like, 90% of the time, I have no idea who these people are, and I just end up in a conversation. Every story I have of a famous person where we've had a conversation was because I was an idiot and then just turned around. I was like, ha, that's crazy. What do you think? Oh, famous person who I definitely recognize, but I'm like, buddy. You know, and, like, that's how I've had those conversations because it's ridiculous.
I would think you were a guy from Macedon. Like, if I, like, was sitting at a bus stop and you were just chilling there, I think I would tell people later that I met somebody from Macedon. I'm not sure who.
That's is like, Macedon a band?
Yeah.
Okay.
Am I, like, I'm, like, 2 or 3 of them.
Right? Yeah, I was like going to say, like, at any given time.
Like, 2 or 3 of them.
I think I'm the amalgam of the dude and Walter.
Okay.
Like, if you were to combine both of those characters into one, that's probably... as close as I could get.
Well, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that. Usually, like hey, relax, but sometimes wielding a bat at a car.
Yeah. If a sketch came up, like, I could play either role.
Yeah.
and do it reasonably well. As well as I could do something like that.
I'm going to have to say that my favorite role that I've ever seen you play was in the Chris Levi sketch about the Pina Colada song, where it was the Pina Colada song bar,
uh-huh.
and you guys had to continuously say the long title of the song, and it was the best. It was just the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Escape the Pina Colada song bar?
yep.
What's his name? Rupert Holmes?
Yep, and you were Rupert Holmes. Yeah. You were all like, hello, welcome to my bar.
Yeah, that was
really funny.
That was
the laugh.
That was the funny thing, and that was just constantly repeating the entire title of that song.
It's such a simple joke that was perfect. Yeah, and but the level of seriousness, it was like you, Franny, who's the person who's the straight man in that? Was that Delia? No, wait.
I think it was.
Was it Delia?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because I just remember seeing that. I think it was like either. Was it their grad show? No, it was their level 4 recital, and I watched that. God, I laughed so hard. I tried to convince him so hard to put that in the final show of, like, level 5 for him, because I was like, dude, that fucking scene, though.
I was convinced I was going to mess it up.
Because
I hate
so
memorizing
times.
Lines. And I was like, I'm going to say this different every time. But I did it. It was good. I think my favorite Levi sketch was the ATM one.
What happens at the ATM? I remember that one.
It opens with a lady talking to her mom and getting money out of the ATM, and you find out she's newly single, and then a guy comes up to rob her. But they start talking. Or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it's like a meet cute.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, yeah, this is going well. Let's go out to dinner. And then she's like, yeah, and then we can go rob more people. And it starts getting crazier and crazier, and he ends up just, like, taking her money and sneaking away while she's talking. And if done poorly, that could be just, like, super creepy and wrong for all the, you know, for several reasons.
Sure.
I did that one with Caitlin, and I thought it came out really sweet.
Yeah.
And still had that twist at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I like those. I would like to stage a whole sketch show of just, like, kind of pathos sketches, sweet sketches, like John Golson's King sketch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I also like a recent one that he wrote, about a guy who's trying to go use a time machine, and he tries, like, in the scene, I think he tries like 20 times, and then he's about to give up and he tries one more time, and when he comes back his friend doesn't believe him, but he really did go, and he's all like, oh my god, you look amazing. And it's just this great, like, just that one character goes from being like, I'm fucking gonna do this, to, like, coming back, like, crying, like, finally I'm home. It was like, I love it. I was like, cry, good, yeah, so fun. Oh yeah, I love a good sketch that ends with crying, guys, come on, you know I do. Yeah. If everyone's not dead, then someone should be crying.
Yeah, I like a whole show that's not going for laughs, that has those sweet laughs in it, yeah. Or whatever, but it's not just a crazy, absurd show. I don't know how it would go over.
What's your television show sketches, or like what sketch comedy before or outside of stuff you've done on your own do you dig on? Like, what's your favorite, if you have any, or comedians if you lean the other way?
I grew up with SCTV and Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, SCTV, nice.
And really got into Saturday Night Live in, like, the Dick Ebersol years, which is generally considered to be the low point, but that's where I started. And there was one season with, like, Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest and Martin Short. There were almost everything they did was filmed. It wasn't really live at all, but it was like seeing Christopher Guest's style come together in that, and, you know, things that Martin Short's still kind of doing. Started there and everything, and that was
Martin Short was on there for a while, right?
I think he was just 1 year.
Really?
I think he had a 1 year contract.
A lot of
Billy,
people just
Billy Crystal was there. And Rich Hall, who's like huge in England now, but I thought he was great then. And he didn't do a whole lot in the States afterwards, a couple of years. And he moved to England, and I guess he's quite a personality there.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, when you see somebody, like, go to a different market like that.
Yeah.
And that's what they classify him as over there, is quiet personality.
Yeah, he pops up on, like, quiz shows and stuff. He's in panels on lots of things and, you know, does hour-long stand-up specials.
He did
one where he came and toured America. Yeah, just like a Search for America type of series.
Wait, like Stephen Fry did?
Yeah, and Billy Connolly. Billy Connolly did a great one.
Billy Connolly does a great everything. That guy's so enthusiastic and, like, just a wild druid of a human being that, yeah, like, I would, I don't know.
I still use the phrase Buddy Holly plane. That's from a Billy Connolly bit in the 80s.
Was he a part of a, like, team? Like, was he a part of, like, a... either a sketch group or, like, a duo or anything?
I don't know. I think so.
Yeah.
I think I heard that. And he's a musician as well. And I believe he has Alzheimer's now.
Hmm. Do you keep up with these comedians, or did you just...
As it is for me to remember scripts... it's super easy for me to remember every stupid little thing I read like that.
Luckily for Billy Connolly, I think, like, he's always been so wacky and zany that you could have, if I had not heard you say that, probably never would have noticed the difference down the line. Like, I feel like he's just
that. And he's well in his 70s too.
Yeah.
So he's.
So. Did you ever watch the years where Gilbert Gottfried was on there? And
I've seen that stuff. I don't remember seeing it then.
Yeah. So did you hate it after that?
No, it's like always been there, in and out.
Yeah.
Or whatever, but...
Did you just watch it when you were in, like, high school, and then you kind of didn't when you got older
and, then,
and living life?
Yeah, and then come back and see it a few years later. Like, I saw, like, the Adam Sandler and Farley stuff later and everything, like, when I could afford cable, when I lived someplace with enough roommates where we could pay the cable bill.
Right on.
And, like, Comedy Central or something was showing those, and that's when I saw those, and then...
Adam Sandler years were my high school years. The SNL Adam Sandler was... I remember freshman year in high school, I got his, like, album. The, like, comedy album with a bunch of weird character shit things.
They're all gonna laugh at you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the longest
so
pee.
Gross. Yeah, the goat, the talking goat. So, did that, like, watching SNL, did that ever inspire you to, like, write when you were younger, or...?
No. I thought it was something. It was like, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
But I can't do that. You know, that just... other kids didn't get me.
Okay.
I wanted to be the class clown.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wasn't getting the laughs. I bombed years before I ever did comedy.
Well, that's probably, like, you just gotta break on through to that other side, and then it just doesn't matter. Like, you played music, though, right?
I didn't do enough dick jokes. Turns out I was too heady for the crowd.
It's rarely the complaint, but if you could just throw a few more dick jokes in there, bring it down.
You're like, do you have any poop material? And I'm like, you know, I'm working up this whole thing on Augusta Pinochet. It's so musical, right? Augusta Pinochet.
That's weird that you bring that up, because I actually wrote my college thesis on Pinochet.
I did my research before I came.
No way! Shut up. That's so funny. It's just particularly timely, I think, for the years that we were growing up, certainly. So after high school, did you you went to college?
Yes.
Did you?
I went to college off and on for the next 7 years.
Right on. Were you doing creative stuff there? Were you trying to be businessy? You know, how people think they've got to take classes to give them some sort of job, like people told us we had to? You don't have to, kids.
I went my own way through college. I found a few professors that I just really liked and took everything that they taught. I didn't really follow any kind of plan. I worked at the newspaper a lot, several different times.
Writing?
Writing, cartooning, section editor.
Right on.
Yeah, I totally geeked out there because we had like our own building and a place where we could get high, a place to park, you know, a lot of perks.
Yeah,
and they paid. I think it was like $15 a cartoon or photo, $20 a story or something, and then they paid section editors. So, yeah, it was a sweet deal. And I would probably still be doing that if I could.
Yeah, working on newspapers and stuff?
Just that one.
That one, okay, that yeah. one. I bet you could probably go back and try to be a teacher or something.
I never got that degree. Because I wasn't following a plan.
Right on.
I mean,
yeah, I did the thesis and everything.
It's always there still, right?
Yeah. I took a lot of film classes and wrote a shitload of papers on Charlie Chaplin because I wrote one paper on Charlie Chaplin and the professor loved it. And I continued to take that professor's classes, so I just went deeper and deeper into Chaplin and he loved it every time. I always got A's. I would put, instead of like citing sources and all of that stuff, and internal citations and all of that, at some point I would just put in editorial comments too. And he loved that. and would give me A's, I guess, just because that made him laugh.
That's
So I started to find an audience.
That's great that everything that, you know, you could just continue to write about Chaplin, no matter what, like, the subject or anything was. Just kind of lean it into anything else.
Yeah, actually, when we got to the thesis, I was originally going to do something on stoner movies. And
sure.
There hadn't been really anything written about it at that time.
Yeah.
It hadn't been studied, and that big second wave of, like, Friday and Half-Baked and all of those was just coming out then. Nobody'd gone back and explored, like, the Cheech and Chong stuff, so it ended up being really tough to research at that point. And with maybe 2 weeks left before deadline, I called him up and said, "Hey, I think I'm going to switch to Chaplin. I'm having trouble finding stuff." He's like, "Do you need an extension?" I said, "I don't think so." And I don't know if I opened a single source for that one or not. I think I just wrote it from my head and then just did the usual suspects of citations at the end.
Well, you've done so much work and research previous, you probably did know the right things to say.
Yeah, I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
It was a pretty well self-taught expert on Charlie Chaplin at one point.
Other than the utilitarian aspect of getting A's because the teacher likes it, were you interested in Charlie Chaplin?
Yeah.
What about him?
It was after the movie came out about him with Robert Downey Jr. I really liked that movie, watched it a lot, and then started watching Chaplin's actual stuff, and then started listening to the music he composed and read his autobiography. And, he's a guy who came from nothing, just total crazy background, who wound up in another country and became the biggest star in the world. And then fought a crazy, kind of dictatorial government at the end of it and got kicked out of the country that he loved. It's a crazy story.
Yeah. Wow. So you were just able to...
But also, he's kind of a creep with the young girls, so...
So you built to that, though. That wasn't, like, the first favorite. Like, it didn't end with, and he was exiled, and that was a bummer for everybody.
No, I hadn't thought about Chaplin in a while, and this is kind of looking at him like through the current lens. Yeah. Like, he's kind of problematic, too.
Isn't that interesting,
most
though?
Most of them were.
I'm sure, so, like, when you wrote your papers, you didn't point that out, because that was... 20 years ago.
And also, it seemed like your teacher liked Chaplin.
It was part of the legend, kind of. I mean, he ended up his, like, I don't know, fourth or fifth wife, and the last love of his life or whatever was 30 or 40 years younger than him when they got married. Mm-hmm. They were together for another 30-something years. So.
Hmm.
Whatever the math is, she was.
Yeah.
Maybe 17 like or 18, and he was like 50. I don't know.
Like, soldiers were just coming home.
No, I thought it was going to be like 30 and 80.
It was Eugene O'Neill's daughter, actually, the playwright, Eugene O'Neill.
Huh.
And he disowned her.
Eugene O'Neill disowned his daughter for marrying Chaplin?
Yeah, when she was dating a guy older than him, probably.
Sure. Whoa.
Hmm.
That's wild.
Where do you meet Charlie Chaplin as, like, a teenager? Or
you know what, though?
She was a debutante type of deal, you know?
The
she
world
was a social
darling.
Like
a
cotillion
sort of thing.
People who were younger did more things back then. Like, it was, you know, now we talk about it through the lens of the world that we live in, where it's like, you have to be 18 to walk through the, like, welcome mat of, like, any adult activities of any kind.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the day, they'd be, like, hanging out at bars and, like, you know... weren't the kids were delivering newspapers and shit, like, you know, they had jobs and they were doing things. They were probably prostitutes that were young, like, all sorts of things that, like, would not fly even a little today. And it just bit by bit, I think, as the generations went, I think there's a back and a forth of it, but, like, the generation after that were like, that was not cool, right? We should not do that. And everyone was like, yeah, that was not cool. And then the next year, the next generation is their kids who are all like, what? That's a ridiculous thing. No one should ever do that. And now we're here where it's like, burn the people that would consider something like that. And it's like, just different levels of, like, acceptance. And then eventually it'll come back around.
Yeah.
When the world crumbles again, people will only live till the age of 40. So, you know, they'll have to get married at 15.
Yeah, we'll have to readjust everything.
Yeah. Now we, like, live till 100. I mean, why are we even getting married before 60? What's the reason?
That's how I feel, yeah.
Pardon my
so
weird
much.
Political rant. Oh, man. So, you did the newspaper work.
Longer.
You did all the newspaper work, and you did a lot of writing. So, clearly, that's been something you've been doing all along. How, after this, all your writing stuff...
Really haven't written much since then.
But you did music after that. How'd you get into there?
Advertising?
You mean, like, right after college?
Did an internship. One of my professors had an ad agency and did an internship at his ad agency. And did a couple freelance things for him afterwards, and didn't like that. Didn't have the hustle for that freelance life.
You didn't want to be a madman?
Nah, I wanted. I don't know. Maybe I did want to be a madman, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to earn it. Just wanted to start in that office, I think.
Yeah, nobody does.
But yeah, all along I'd been playing guitar, and that started off with like, I want to be the Beatles. And then quickly realizing I'm never going to be the Beatles. And I can't do this. And wait, who are the Ramones? Oh, I can do this. And then playing in and out of bands and getting gradually more and more serious with that. And yeah, basically I was going to graduate from college. And I'm like, I got enough hours. And they're like, okay, you're going to graduate. And they're like, oh, we looked at this, and you need to go back and take two more science classes or something like that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm in a band now. We're going to go play in like St. Louis and Chicago and places. I see you. I'll come back to you. Therapy. I'll come back to you if we're not millionaires at the end of the month. So I worked a lot of restaurant jobs.
So did you go travel with the band? Was there actual travel with this band?
Not as much as I anticipated, not as much as I dreamed of.
Sure.
But then you get in another band, you get in another band. And
how'd you end up down here?
Doing that. I was in a band from Kansas City that played a few shows down here, and we're like, oh man, this is a cool scene. There's all these great places to play, and we should move down here and try to make it.
So are your band members still here?
None of them moved down. They all backed out. I said, I'm going. So I came down without them.
Whoa!
I don't think any of them still play. I don't know how far they went.
How old were you at the time?
27 then.
And you were just like, I made a commitment to myself, I'm going to make this move, I'm going to do it?
Yeah. I mean, when we were excited about it, it seemed like this was the place where music was happening, and it wasn't back there.
Sure.
Not in Kansas City. So, yeah, I came down here. I was going to try and do it before it was too late, you know, before I'm 30.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, came down here and got a job at Guitar Center. And a month or so into that, met a guy who played drums who I started hanging around with. And we jammed a couple of times and did like a Ramones tribute thing, but didn't start a band or anything. Just hung out. And he's like, he's one of my best friends now, still. And then another month or so after that, met somebody else who's like, hey, we need a guitar player. You want to come play for a punk band? And went and played with that band for a year, year and a half, and toured with them a fair amount. And
like all around the country?
Yeah, mostly West Coast. Lots of West Coast and Texas and a little bit of South.
Fun.
They kind of built that up and ended up getting fired
from that band,
yeah. And
did you want to share why, or is that a story that
just didn't get along with somebody in there? We weren't meshing well, and he was a founding member and one of the songwriters in the band. He was a creative force and founding member in the band, and I was a guy. He was actually the guy who asked me to join the band, and we just ended up not being a great fit. Whatever.
Right on.
But when I came back from that tour, my drummer friend Mikey was like, cool, now you can do that band that you want to do. You can do your songs and everything, because I was constantly writing my own songs and stuff, and I'd play them for him. He's like, oh yeah, cool, and just sit there pounding out shit on his knee like drummers do or whatever. And yeah, we put together a band there, and I led that band for 5 years, recorded a couple albums, and played a lot around Austin and a little bit outside of Austin. And got reviewed in Europe. And it was cool. Signed to got courted by a Canadian record label. Had a like agreement to put a album out there, and then the band dissolved.
Oh.
That drummer ended up marrying somebody and moving to Chicago, and I didn't want to do it without him.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote the songs, but he made them songs. And it was like, okay, we've had 5 years, and that's good.
Man,
so, not today, Canada.
Yeah, we'd replaced other people.
Not today, Canada.
Had a couple guitar players and four bass players. The same one 3 different times. He would get called away for whatever reason. He had a family and a job and everything, and there'd be like months long stretches where he couldn't do anything, and we'd replace him, and then that person wouldn't work out, and he would be ready again.
I know bands like that right now.
Yeah, like he's the one who gets the call if there's a reunion.
Yeah.
But yeah, couldn't replace Mikey. I wrote the songs, I sang the songs, and he was more important to the band than I was.
Sounds hard.
What, to realize that?
No, to break up. Like, I've had troops, like, I remember when Water Park broke up, it was like, it felt like a real breakup. Like, I was like, oh, God. I mourned it in that same way.
It was kind of a logical time for it to happen in like, both of our lives and kind of the life cycle of a band, though. And, I mean, it kind of hurt, but it was a good time to do it. I helped him move.
You're like, you know? Super.
I drove the truck up to Chicago.
You got to, oh, well, you went to Chicago and found your perfect stranger's corner with him.
Yeah. Every time I go up there, we take a picture of me pretending I'm bowling with the big balls by that statue of Lincoln in the park.
I've only been to Chicago once, and it was winter, so all I saw was snow.
I like seeing it. Yeah. Don't want to live with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to, like, visit for a second.
Yeah.
So after the band dissolved, just went back to restauranting and or just kind of maintained that, and then where did you stumble into the whole performance part? Like comedy performance.
Yeah, how'd you get to us?
Doing photography, because both the best friends I mentioned, Mikey and Polly, are photographers. And they're both gone, different corners. And I got a hold of a camera and just started taking pictures because there wasn't somebody there taking pictures of stuff. And I'm like, oh, man, that'd be a good picture. Too bad nobody's taking a picture of it. So I took a bunch of what I thought would be good pictures before I knew what good pictures were. And, yeah, started doing photography. And that was cool after I started getting decent at it, understanding it and everything. I started wanting more attention and praise and gratification, which is the kind of thing you don't get instant gratification in photography like you do in playing punk rock.
Sure.
And I ended up with a platinum badge for South By, and I took my camera to everything and started taking pictures. And just started talking to the people I was taking pictures of and hanging out with a few comedians and getting high with a few comedians. And a couple of them laughed at stuff I said. We're like, you're funny. Do you do comedy? And I'm like, no, I can't do that. You guys do that. You're good. You're good. You don't need me. And then one of them...
As if there's, like, just a finite amount of comedians right? That there need to be. That sponge is full. I'm good.
And one of them was like, I think you'd be good at improv. He's like, you played in bands. He's like, you're not a solo guy. Hmm. He's like, but you're funny. I think you might like improv. That would be comfortable for you. That'd be your way into comedy. And
what a smart dude.
Yeah.
Thanks,
smart
dude.
That was T.J. Miller.
Really?
Yeah. He suggested improv to me.
That's hilarious.
That is,
And I made Paul Provenza laugh when we made a pipe out of an apple, and I said, I can't believe I'm getting high with the guy who replaced the guy in Northern Exposure.
You're the only person in the world allowed to say these things to people. And they're like, this guy's funny. Other people get punched in the face. You get, like, accolades. Oh, my God. That's so funny. What a wild... What an unusual couple of people to tell you to do comedy. And then you were like, this guy's legit. And then you found comedy?
And... Yeah, somebody else that I worked with told me about the place where you were working, and there was a Groupon for it, so I did it.
Good old Groupon.
And met you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And started doing improv. Great, wow. That's fascinating.
And I think it was the first class, I don't remember what I said, and you were like, oh, you're clever, we'll fix that.
Yeah, I say those things. I
think I'm a little less cruel than I used to be. Sorry. I had to make it through those years before I can be the warm, snuggly mama bear.
It was a good lesson.
I remember when you started showing up around that scene, and I always assumed that you were just like an OG, like a veteran who had just like gone off and done some stuff and now is back. Like sometimes happen, you know, like with Yamina and, you know, like people like that.
Uh-huh.
That's how like confident and like with it you were like right out of the gate. I was like, I don't know, because I was super nervous and lame.
Yeah, you really did fit right in like a puzzle piece. Yeah, it was like, some people come in and I know, like, we're going to have a fleeting relationship and I'll never see you again. And then some people I'm all like, oh, okay, hey, what's up? Going to see you for the next 10 years of my life. Yeah. Let's do it. Like, when I went to the Fallout party on Saturday, I walked up and the first two people I saw were Chadwick and Yamina. And I was like, this couldn't be more perfect. How are you both? Right. Like, it was just such a, like, good. I feel like we've come full circle. Let's all hug and feel good about a new beginning and then do this thing. And it was so nice. And so it's nice to have family. But yeah, I probably razzed you because I was all like, okay, cool. He's our people.
That was a huge stumbling block for me for a long time, was jokiness. And still is.
Like people give you a hard time about it?
No, I mean in improv. Going for the quick laugh, going for the joke, hitting a button but destroying a scene, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, people do improv in 1,000 different ways, and, like, the more I've talked to people that, like, do it from different places, mm-hmm. the more it sort of opens my mind to things, like, especially because part of my, like, excitement for the new beginning is a new syllabus to get to teach.
Yeah.
Because I've been so deeply indoctrinated in this style that I really need to see more. Like, the episode that came out today is one of my friends from when I was in my early 20s doing stand-up, Irene, who does improv, and she gave me this list of books that she was like, every improviser should read it. And legit, I haven't read a single one of them. And I thought, wow, how interesting. I'm so excited that there's this new world that can be opened up to me. That, like, and that's, I actually think that that's one of the best things about improv and why it's probably a good path, is because it can constantly renew. Like, it's like, we've learned stuff, but, like, as soon as that new syllabus is written, I'm gonna take it. You know, I'll teach level one for sure, but, like, I want to go through it. I want to feel what it's like, figure out what that is, see it in whatever new way I can see it.
After I graduated, I don't know, maybe a year and a half after I graduated, when Keebler moved to town, I took his first improv class that he taught here,
which was
a level one class.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. And I learned and relearned.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, because you forget stuff, and then you hear stuff from just another angle.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it, too. It sort of has a, like, longevity to it, where it's, like, it can constantly renew and change, so you don't have to worry about necessarily. Like, you can hit plateaus and go have ups and downs, but still stick to the same thing.
Yeah.
It makes commitment to it a lot easier, because it's, like, a free and easy thing to commit to. super interesting. But you have, since doing improv, you got really involved in, like, sketch comedy, and you created a show. Tell me about that experience. That was you've had many years with the panel show. What's the journey of that? How did that feel for you from beginning through to now?
It's kind of like a band. a lot like a band.
Yeah.
I had the idea for this kind of format at the end of level 5, and tried to bring in my class as like a troupe that was going to do this kind of just panel of experts type of deal. Everybody would play a character, and there'd be like a moderator, and it'd be like a Fernwood Tonight type of show or something. Just didn't have to be famous people being interviewed. And I wanted to play a different character every time we did it. I didn't want to host it. And asked somebody else to host it. And we practiced it a couple of times with a coach. And I think performed it twice. And everybody's like, I don't get it. I don't know what you're going for here. Sorry. Good luck. And bailed. And then I'm at Laz doing neighborhood stuff. And I had a slot book, a 15-minute slot on somebody's show. And I said, hey, I'm trying to do this. I guess I'm going to host it. You want to come play on it? We got a few other people to play characters. And he played the maintenance guy in the theater and my boss, the producer of the show, who was obviously the same guy, but he just put on a hat when he was the maintenance guy. Like, he wasn't really two different characters. It was just two different jobs. And we did, you know, a kind of awkward little interview show trying to talk about news stories with these characters. And when it was over, I'm like, you know, it wasn't good, but it was fun. You want to do this again? And he's like, yeah. So we did that for a while, got better at it, did stuff with like full troops playing all the characters.
And were you writing whole like narrative shows?
Or? No, at that point we were just collecting news stories that we thought would be easy to say funny things about, and just hoping that the characters would just get into discussions about it and end up being funny.
So everybody just created their characters and it wasn't like a full script?
No. And then we would just put up the things on there and try to make it increasingly like a talk show. When we got to the point where we kind of scratched and clawed our way somehow into getting weekly slots, when we still weren't good, Chadwick coached us for the first month, directed the shows for the first month, and he's like, just do a late night talk show. And we put a desk out there and started making it fit that format, and did that for the entire run of weekly shows. Like 3 months we were weekly, and just got better and better at doing that. And then we went to like twice a month or once a month, and then sporadically, still an hour-long slot, and just started experimenting with themes and doing different variety shows and stuff like that, which we would farm out the bits. When we were doing the weekly, we actually had a writer's room, and we would discuss things every day just in a messenger thread. Everybody just in there called it the joke farm. People would throw news stories in there and just riff on it and do shit, and then Levi would collect those into one file, and I'd go through and pick monologue jokes out of that or new stories that we wanted to do based on that in the thing. And it was like doing a TV show, except we couldn't pay anybody. We weren't getting money. But it was awesome. It was awesome having the talent that we had there, because everybody wanted to do it for a couple of weeks. And then they're just like, oh, man. And we had, you know, a deep bench of performers, and just pull them out of the writer's room, because everybody there was a performer more than a writer. And yeah, it was great. People just got to put their bits on. So we weren't responsible for writing a lot of material.
Yeah.
So all I had to do was not drop the ball, just go out there and keep bringing people out. And I got better and better at that. I'm still not a good host, I don't think. But I've got a few host tricks, and I'm a good co-host.
I feel like every time I've ever watched it, if like something falls flat, I feel like the audience feels like it's their fault. I don't know,
that's like, what I want. I feel like the audience to feel bad.
Doesn't laugh, but they're like
about themselves, not about you.
Feel like they should.
Like, it's like junior high all over again, man. They don't get me.
Yeah,
but they want to so much.
Yeah, that's the thing is, yeah, you've developed like a delivery that is like, I don't know. Yeah, it's like, that's so smart. I feel like I should get it. You know how like in Mystery Science Theater, like there are these like references to like 1930s starlets and weird like politicians from the 60s. and you just laugh anyways.
You have no idea what he's saying. Yeah, like, this is a joke, I can tell.
Just the rhythm of the words.
Yeah, I can surmise backwards that person was, you know, like, similar to this other situation.
You get a lot of those references. You did Paul Lynde on the panel show.
That was fun writing those things, too.
He does the best Paul Lynde.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity. Like, I always love just having an opportunity to do it for so long, because...
Yeah, I've been doing Paul Lynde as a character since I was probably 7.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
I was just amazed somebody else knew who it was. Somebody who wasn't Daniel Webb know who it was.
I'm honestly surprised we've never done a Hollywood Squares show. Like that, because that shit would just be amazing.
Yeah, I like game shows.
Yeah, me too. You ever watch Buzzer? It's an antenna channel, but you can also get it on Amazon. It's a whole channel that's just 70s and 80s game shows. Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
I watch that on YouTube. Richard Dawson rabbit holes.
Oh, so great. I love it when he kisses everyone at the beginning. Like, full open lip, possible tongue, every kiss.
Yeah,
I love it.
Between 13 and 80, no lady was safe.
Mm-mm, absolutely not. And for a while, I thought maybe he was racist, but then I saw him give a big, deep kiss to a black woman, and I was like, oh, there we go. All right, he's fine.
Did they still play that game where, like, celebrities ask you questions to find out if you're, like, a liar or not?
I mean, they do it in on the show. Like, you can watch that show.
What is that show called?
To Tell the Truth.
I think, yeah, To Tell the Truth.
And there's three of them, and they're like, I'm Joe Smith. And then you have to ask them questions about their job. And it's like, he works with dolphins. And you know, he's in the aquarium. And you're like, how much does a dolphin... You know, they always ask questions that there's no way this starlet has any idea about the correct answer. What is the net weight of the food per day of a dolphin? You don't fucking know that. I'm super sorry. That's not anything you know. They always ask those kinds of questions. I've watched a lot of old game shows.
I love that vintage television, just talk shows and game shows.
It's like so sponsored by a toothpaste, like a tooth powder.
All the stuff that came on when the cartoons were over.
Match Game is my favorite, and I can't
Match
believe
game.
They
Match
they
Game
do it
74.
Now. Oh, yep, so good. There are people on there that are the famous people. I have no idea why they're famous, but I just love them. I love watching them.
Betty White on a game show, and she's been doing it forever.
Buzzer does full Betty White days.
Yeah.
It's antenna great. TV. Like, we don't have cable, so we have one thing is the antenna, and it's just all day. It's beautiful. Yeah. Babies love it, just in case you ever babysit.
Don't go
baby.
Thinking that Betty White just got funny when she was old or something, like Golden Girls, and then she was funny.
Wait, she had a game show?
No, she's on every game show, but she was acting in movies. And then they asked her to do the game show.
Mary Tyler Moore show. It's a fantastic show. Mary Tyler Moore show. If you've never watched that run, watch that run. It's 30 Rock 1971.
You know, I was going to tell you about the panel show. Well, first, actually, I wanted to ask one question about what you were saying, and then I'll give you my follow-up, but... What's the current incarnation of panel show? Because I saw you working on it, but what I haven't seen Laz in a while. I assume that was part of the band Zen Let It Go.
Laz left about a year ago.
Right, but what are you doing now?
Marcia had been teching, and she'd been producing already, and then she was just sole producer after that. And now it's me. I'm doing... a couple of I'm calling it the Mondo Panorama, where it's a kind of a Dick Cavett style chat with three guests, and then an improv troupe will come on and perform an Armando based on the chat.
That's excellent. Yeah, that sounds super fun.
Are you calling it a panel show
with the sub?
It's branded panel show Mondo Panorama. Because you know how valuable that panel show brand is.
That's
a guaranteed 4 to 7 people in any performance.
You think so, though, but I was going to tell you the thing. Thank you for telling me about the sort of current incarnation of it, because I remember we had talked about it, and I was all like, wait, I'm going to make you plug it later, so let's talk about it now. But I was going to tell you that I think of the panel show like The Neighborhood, in that, and I wanted to offer my shoulder to cry on during the downs, because you have been doing this show for so many years, and sometimes it's going great, and sometimes it's not, and the, like, time slot switch, and the whole cast switches, and everything is, and you have been the rock the whole time, and I understand that.
Yeah, I'm stubborn.
I understand. No, but it matters, and it really does, and that's why I'm like, I'm glad you're using the name, because the length of time that you've stuck to it doesn't matter what it ever is. In 10 years, it could be a show that is not neither a panel nor a show, but yeah, it is still panel show with you doing whatever the shit you want to do and whatever subtitle to make it make sense.
What I want to do with it after these two shows is take some time off and restage our musical show from last year.
Nice.
And try to do that as a run where we can do it like 4 weeks in a row.
Awesome.
Because that show was amazing. That was the first one that Marcia directed. And I think it's the first one that we came in on time. She's so good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I want to bring her back. And anybody who will come back, I want to do that. And hopefully we can get a run.
That's awesome. So fun. A musical one, huh?
Yeah, yeah, musical puppets. Had puppets there. It's a good time.
That's super great. Yeah, I think I say that I feel akin to your work.
It's on YouTube.
As the stuff, but oh well.
Panel show musical on YouTube on Pistol Vision.
Is that the name of your channel?
Yeah.
Pistol Vision.
Pistol Vision.
Oh, all right. I see. I'll write
you
it down.
You get a lot of like NRA fans that like getting lost on your YouTube page.
No.
And just being very confused.
No, that would be fun.
But like, specifically,
those people are lighthearted.
Like
those people are fun. You know what I like is how they can laugh at themselves.
I feel like that joke actually could be said for like most people right now in America. Is like, you know, I love how they can take a joke. Things are going super well for people dealing with some shit. Oh, funny. Yeah, well, stay strong with panel show. I mean, as far as, like, continuing to do stuff, because, like, I've hit the ground, you know, with... I've had some horrible times doing The Neighborhood. I've had people bail on me hard. I've had to, like, rebuild a show in a day. Like, I totally understand. And it's like, just keep going, because sometimes you'll just get the right people and you'll have the best times. And
it's tough. We're working with million-dollar talent who has to be unpaid.
Yeah.
There's so many great people. If they're going to find something that's a little bit more what they want to do, they're going to bail. You got nothing to keep them there. It's like, but my dream. And they're like, yeah, but my dream. It's like, okay.
Yeah. That's why it only
really sucks. It only really bites you in the ass when they start taking over your time slot.
Yeah.
That's when it hurts.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you were on my show last month, but now you got my time slot.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody's got a dream. Everybody should get to put it on a stage, right?
It can be difficult to find people that are going to have your back as a team, for sure. I mean, I've had that experience because I try to only involve people that I consider of a certain caliber.
Mm-hmm.
And so those people are often very busy with things, you know.
Yeah.
And so I lose people pretty fast, but I try to set up at the beginning my expectation that it will be not a one-month situation.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd like you to work with me for at least 3 months. Can you promise me that?
Yeah, and it's like, most of the time, people just like saying yes to everything. You know, it's not even like they intend to be flaky. It's
everybody's
just like everybody's friends. It's like, yeah, let's do that.
Everyone's so excited about an opportunity.
Yeah.
And
then they start asking like
to help
specifics
their friends
about like
it's
scheduling.
Like,
and
I like friends and all, but I've been doing this long enough that if people are shitty to me, I'll tell you both. Because producer to producer, if there's somebody who's not going to do the job, I don't want other people to have to deal with that crap. So it's like, you know, if they're a flake, I'll let you know. People are sometimes just can't do it. I give people chances. Some people come to me and say, after I like hire a new person, they'll be like, oh, hey, by the way, that person, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, well, let's see. I made my bed, so I'm gonna lie in it. See how that goes.
But, you got a list.
But I try to make. I do. I do. Flakes I definitely and not flakes. No, I don't write not flakes. That would be just like everybody else.
Flakes and clusters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a breakfast cereal.
Yeah. I mean, a theater is just a cereal.
Yeah. Just nuts, funny bunches flakes. Of clusters. You're right. Oh my god, a few raisins? Oh, weird! It's like, wow, an improv theater is a cereal. It's
muesli.
Oh god. We're really figuring shit out right now.
Honey Bunches of Crazy People.
Honey Bunches of Comedy. That's so funny. So, what's your what's the thing right now that like you're super into? Are you obsessing on a television show? Have you been reading a particular book lately? Is there an album you can't get out of your, you know, queue? What do you call it when you listen to music these days? It was like cassette tape, no. Stereo, no.
NHL 97. I got one of those video game players. I've got every Sega game.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah, I'm playing Sega again.
Oh, right on. Do you, like, buy it at a thrift shop, or did you have it?
And then you just found games? Got it off Amazon. Nice. Found out about it on YouTube. That's the other thing. I just watch YouTube videos.
Yeah?
And, yeah, and thrifting. Always thrifting. Huh. But, yeah, there's YouTube videos of people going thrifting. And that's some days I don't want to go thrifting. I'll just watch somebody else do it.
Is that why people watch videos of other people playing video games?
Yeah, like Minecraft and stuff.
Because they're like, they're too tired to do it themselves, but they're like, oh, I'll watch him do it.
Yeah.
They were always the roommate. Like, there's always the guy playing and then the guy on the couch watching, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
It was that, like, they got their own place now, but they still miss Seth. You know?
Exactly my
hey,
story.
Look at this channel.
Yeah,
they sit there, they can still hold the bong, and they don't have to hold a controller. Yeah.
I watched my roommate play every God of War game, every Uncharted game, and feel as satisfied as though I had done anything myself.
Yeah.
And because those games are like super cinematic anyway, so it's like, if they're not terrible.
Yeah,
I'm not
good at most video games. Yeah. But I had friends who were like great at GTA games. So I just sit and get high and watch that. It's like watching a movie.
Yeah.
Except you could direct it. You'd be like, hey, why don't you go over there and just beat up that guy selling pencils for no reason? Like, okay, you want me to shoot him? Nah, that seems extreme.
Scruff him up a little.
Run over him with a tow truck.
Good lord.
It's like, oh shit, can you drive that car like off the bridge? Cool. But it's like stuff I could never do, right? I couldn't even cross the street in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always like overwhelmed with options and like big open area games.
Like you could beat up a hooker and steal her money. I'm like, yeah, the hooker just shot me, dude. I'm not good at this.
Very much like in life.
Don't abuse sex workers. I'm not saying that.
I think video games are hard, man.
Respect.
Yeah, I think it's just
respect
like the
even
same
the
thing.
Video ones.
With the real world, like, if I have a lot of options, I'm gonna take none of them and get nothing done. Like, in Grand Theft Auto, yeah, like, I'd never accomplish anything, except I'd just try and kill as many people on the low.
That's why 16-bit hockey makes so much sense.
Yeah, or cause mayhem. Yeah, that's...
There's a certain amount of time, you gotta stay on the ice, you know? You got one goal, that's a goal.
Yeah.
Is it therapeutic?
No, I'm not very good at it. It's actually very frustrating most of the time. But
does it have like a season? You play like a whole
season? Yeah, I play a whole season.
Yeah. You have to leave it on?
No, but I have lost seasons and I haven't figured out what caused that. But
so it's like a modern
it'll
thing,
save
right?
them.
So
it's all on an SD card. I've got the worst record in the league. And I think I'm playing on the easiest level. But sometimes I get really awesome one-timers and I'll replay it and film it and post it on Facebook. Like I do it all the time. Like, woo! look at that shot. See another one in a week or three.
You should post it on Twitch. There's an audience for that shit.
Yeah.
Did they,
legit.
I've only been on Facebook for 2 years. Like, I'm a little behind the curve.
I swear.
Do you watch hockey, like, yourself?
Nah.
Okay, I was going to say,
I played briefly.
I've heard a lot of people really like that game and not be into hockey.
Yeah.
And that's something I never would have messed with. No one in my hometown would have probably messed with that.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a certain amount of moves, a certain amount of buttons. Yeah. I think it's that. And then I like hockey. But I love baseball, and the baseball games from that era suck.
Yeah.
King Griffey Jr. I don't know where that gets good.
Trying to think. My friend made me play baseball games all the time because he was in sports. And it was always a real bummer. So I just wanted to play the fucking 7-Up game.
Yeah.
Because he had the 7-Up game just sitting over there, like, didn't even want it. It's like one of the best platformers of all time. Yeah! Like that, and like, he had the Chester Cheetah, Cheeto game. Dude had all these, like, licensed merchandise games that were actually the best games.
Did he live in a snack bar?
No, he got his
parents worked for, like, Frito-Lay or something.
Flea market? Yeah. I don't know. Those games sold, like, full price just like everything else. Like, that's kind of those were $60 games when they came out.
They had, like, video games for, like, every movie, too. Like, True Lies, Sega game. Yeah. Three Ninjas Kick Back. Like, they all had games.
Yeah, and, like, they were all entirely different. Like, every Batman game was a completely different, like, feel and design and intent, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for each movie game, or for each movie that came out, like, yeah, I don't know. There was never a good Batman game. Batman Returns was fun. If I remember.
Yeah, they got really good when they got to Arkham.
Oh, dude, I was actually just playing that before I got here. That's the only franchise I think I've ever, like, committed to just playing start to finish.
Batman's done well with the modern platforms.
Yeah. That fight mechanic is, like, perfect. And also, like, I started playing Lord of War. Or not Lord of War. Shadow of Mordor. Which has, like, a similar kind of fight mechanic. Because that's the only way I want to fight things in video games anymore. Like, the fact that everyone doesn't use that is stupid. And, like, why would the fights not look cool and fluid? Yeah. And
the Arkham games are about the only modern games I've spent any time with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really want to try God of War.
I miss Tony Hawk Pro Skater. That's...
I have a Dreamcast with that on it still. And
that's the pinnacle of video game for me.
Yeah.
I met Tony Hawk. Served barbecue to Tony Hawk.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. That was awesome. That was about 3 weeks before I met Obama.
And then he told me...
If I remember right. And I'm like, I don't know. Obama was cool.
I've never played Obama in a video game. Obama. Yeah. Tony Hawk tell you to skateboard? You should get into skateboarding.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, you ever looked into skateboarding classes?
These celebrities giving me jobs. I'm like, why do I gotta go do stuff?
Yeah, I was Secretary of State for 2.5 weeks.
That seems more and more plausible.
All right, then I gotta get back to the improv classes.
There's
guys.
A lot of resumes out there with 2 week federal positions on them lately. Says here you were a press secretary for 16 days. What was that about? Explain this gap.
Don't act like you don't know already.
Tell us why you left your previous job.
Like, oh, it was Trump. But you took the job. Yeah, we're not hiring.
We just wanted to ask you detailed questions about being...
Yeah.
If you had to be fired, if you didn't just quit... When he realized what was up.
If Trump were one of the seven dwarves, who would he be? What kind of question is this? Listen, you're not getting the job. Just answer the question.
Did you, like, sleep well? He would be shitty. The first time that night?
He would be shitty, the dwarf. Is that one of them?
No.
Sleepy, dopey, dark, and shitty.
He's the one you don't see because he's on the toilet the entire time Snow White's around. She's pretty, huh? I hear she's pretty.
It's because she locked him in there because he was creeping on her. He's shitty.
He's shitty. Oh my god. Total sidestep. You said creeper, and it made me think of my baby. Why? Because my baby's room is right by the front, and when I put him in for naps sometimes and he doesn't want to nap, he pulls the curtain and just stares out the front window, and I think, what if someone saw these tiny little eyes staring out the window at them as they walk by, like, ah! It's a tiny baby! And so we just call
him... Is he trying to signal me?
We just call him creeper peeping. We're like, oh, what's he doing in there? Oh, he's just creeper peeping.
In the daytime and the nighttime? If I walked past the house in the nighttime and there was just a baby acting, if you put phosphorant face paint
on the baby
on the baby and just, you know, shine a black light or something back behind him, oh, you could freak people out.
We'll think about that for Halloween for sure, because he does do that I'm nervous, I'm just going to stare at you blankly kind of thing. So that works well for Halloween parties.
The ring, just make them up like that.
Exactly. We're just going to, every year, it's like, what baby scary thing can we make him? What did Chris was saying, he was going to make him Scooby-Doo next year, because Chris invariably looks like Shaggy. So he was going to have him dress up as Scooby-Doo for Halloween this year.
If you had twins, you would do that Shining shit, though, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like, not just for Halloween, just, like, as long as you could get away with it.
I'd
take them to the supermarket and be like, just stand at the end of this aisle. Just stand and wait.
I don't know. If it started to, like, affect the kind of people they were for the rest of the year, though, I think I'd, like, back off. Like, if all of a sudden they just started, like, just hanging out with each other and having their own languages and, like trying to talk in unison to freak me out, like...
You think twins don't do that already without you mentioning anything to them?
Oh, well, I mean, I just don't need to push it being creepy. It's fine. They can have a cute, like, sister-sister kind of thing going on where, like, you know, like, they get it. Not, like creepy, weird, both died at the same time and look the same in the same dress, ghost girls in a hotel.
I guess, whatever. Yeah,
I mean, if they're in on it, though, I mean...
If they're just macabre little girls, it's fine.
Okay, yeah, if I had, like, a little double Wednesday Addams situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Right?
They're not... Kids aren't going to do anything they don't really want to do. If they're in on the joke, they'll do it.
Both of them got that.
Have any goths grown up to become the Addams family? There's time. I mean, there's been enough time.
Dude, Gomez Addams is, like, so not goth.
That's got to be out there.
Yeah.
I bet you there's people... If you were in an investigative documentarian, which you could easily find a family like that in the world somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you can just put out a call on Facebook, like, and probably hear back in a week.
Yeah.
Get around, make it public, right?
Sure.
Does anybody just kind of turn into the Addams family? I mean, like, I guess, like, most goth couples, kids suck.
Yeah.
I don't like kids, but they still fuck, right?
But,
yeah.
Gomez Addams was, like, one of the most energetic and upbeat people. Like, everybody in the Addams family was kind of creepy and morose, sure, but, like, Gomez Addams
was,
like,
stereotypical goth.
Both iterations of him, the TV show and the Raul Julia, like, both of them were, like, these, like, huge, eccentric, passionate, like, for life kind of characters. And then, yeah, like, I don't know, Angelica Houston over there just killing it, being sexy and scary, but, like, they're goth, I guess, like, in inspiration, but, like, nobody that was goth at one point ever graduated to Gomez Addams, I don't think, like, down the line.
I mean, I don't think the goth part is what would lead to it. It would really have to be somebody whose entire livelihood involves death in some way, like a mortician or somebody who runs a cemetery. Because there's a certain level of, like, just accepting this thing that happens, but also kind of being dark about it. Yeah. Because I can imagine the kids of morticians are kind of fucked up about it because they didn't choose to be around it. It's just happening to them, so that could darken them a little bit. And then a woman or whatever the spouse is of the mortician is certainly going to be fine with that kind of situation. So it's really just a matter of wearing black You could easily just set that up. I mean, let's be honest, guys. The real wives shows don't all wear the, like, outfits. Well, maybe they do, but they certainly give them other things to wear, I'm sure. So you just find this family that's kind of morose, and you go, be a little sadder.
Are you saying reality TV is not real?
Okay. I'm not breaking news right now. Spoiler alert, everyone.
At least I've still got wrestling.
Oh, shit. What was the reality show? That was just a Family of Gods.
What's that?
The Ozzy Osbourne show.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just a Family of Gods, essentially.
With an upbeat.
Yeah, with like upbeat all the lights on, and it's like
Ozzy is Gomez Adams.
Yeah, 100%.
100%.
My dad actually told me that I should watch that show to learn about parenting.
Wait, the Ozzy Osbourne show?
He watched that show all the time, and he told, and I didn't watch it. And he was all like, "You ever watch that show?" I said, "No, I haven't seen it." You should watch it. You learn a lot about parenting from that show. And I was like, "Okay." And I never really did, but I wonder now if it would help me.
I wonder if he meant from Ozzy, or like just from like the lack of input that he had in anything, sort of working out. Anyways, like, I don't know, it's sort of...
I don't know,
freedom.
I mean...
The kids handled the freedom well.
Ozzy
well,
really seems like a guy who's just been along for the ride his entire life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's never... I don't think he's ever looked at the steering wheel.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. If you watch that show, he's pretty involved. He talks a lot. They subtitle it, but he talks a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's always just, like, him just being like, what's up with this thing? And they're like, oh, mm-hmm. Dad, come on, you don't know what, you know... BMWs are.
That's his character in the show.
Yeah. Well,
somebody has to ask the questions.
The idea that he's putting any more effort into it than just showing up and
he snorted a line of fire ants because Motley Crue said he should.
Oh God!
You should snort that. And he's like,
Yeah. Well, he's also like genetically predispositioned to be able to just do more drugs than anybody
else. Snorted a line of fire ants because a guy who IV'd Jack Daniels told him to. Let's just put all that out there.
Nobody's making good decisions in this crowd.
It's like, and what other decisions do we talk about Ozzy Osbourne making? Like, none of them are like... And then he finally went back to school for 3 years and got his degree. Yeah, it's like pissed on the Alamo, bit a bat because it just was where his mouth was. Yeah, like...
I can't tell you the number of times I'm just biting into the air and then a bat is there.
Yeah, like hotels, like you would have to let him stay in your hotel knowing full well that he is going to have not only, like, no regard for your, like, your stuff, but, like, a reckless spite towards it. Like, just fuck everything in that hotel room. He would just decimate floors when he would stay in
that
hotel.
That's why I got into music.
Because you wanted to destroy
stuff? I wanted to trash
stuff?
A hotel room.
Oh, yeah? Huh.
You seen the video of Keith Richards throwing a TV off the balcony?
Yes.
Oh, man. I wanted to do that. We used to go to thrift stores and buy old computer monitors and just smash them and shoot them with 22s and shit like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, busted-ass laptops and stuff.
Those old green-screen computer monitors. They're biodegradable, right?
Oh, God.
We just take them out to the creek and shoot them.
See, what I always did, because I wasn't exciting enough to actually wreck a hotel room, was just stay in shitty hotel rooms and then just be a little careless. And then like walk away and just be like, look at that pile of shit I left behind. You know, like look at that dust, and it was just already shitty.
I would unwrap those drinking glasses, throw them over my shoulder. I didn't even care where they landed.
Yeah, you could honestly, if there was like an actual glass in there, you could throw it against the wall, feel like a badass, and then just call it a night, because there's like bullet holes and shit.
You know? Just pick up that tiny shampoo and just squeeze all of it out, and just watch it go down the drain. Just, huh? What are you going to do, Best Western?
That's so funny.
I'm talking like Red Carpet Inn, where you like, you don't even get shampoo.
Scottish Inn.
They don't advise using the showers.
Scottish Inn, they just give you like a sheep's intestine and a bowl of oatmeal.
That's the hotel room. And just a lot to lay down in.
Everyone's gonna stall.
Yeah. No, like,
I worked in hotels because I wanted to be near the crazy things. I didn't work in housekeeping, so I didn't have to be truly the person in charge of it. But I did a lot of checking in of people. No, I just worked at the front
desk.
Auditor?
Was it auditor?
Sometimes I did that. I worked for a while overnight when I lived in New York City, but mostly I did like evening shifts.
Yeah,
I was like the evening manager for a while.
Chains or like,
yeah, I worked for Marriott for a while. I worked at multiple different Marriotts. I worked at a few Hiltons. I would stay in Brand for a little bit. I started out at Holiday Inns. There was a Holiday Inn like right down from where I grew up, so I got into it because my sister worked there. And I was like, sure, I'll work there. And that was a weird ghetto one, still is. But most of the other ones that I worked at were real fancy high end ones. In New York City, especially. I got in on one when it opened, and it was a long-term stay, so it was fucking great, because there were always famous people in there, because people have to just stay in New York for 6 weeks doing whatever, and so we'd always have famous people coming, and it was great. We would just be like, uh-huh, sure. And then there were always weird shit things that would go on, because if people stay in your hotel for more than, like, one or two days, yeah, you can't do much. You're not really gonna fuck up too much. You could break everything in the room and it really wouldn't be that bad, because just FYI, in the basement of every hotel is just replacement everything.
Duplicates.
Yeah. Like three rooms just filled with every piece of shit that needs to go into a room.
Say a hooker gets killed, somebody moves the body, they could replace it with another hooker body before the cops get there. Nobody ever knows.
There's so many hooker bodies.
A fresher, more presentable hooker body. So that you know. You seem like you were a man of class before your crime of passion.
Well, we also had to steam clean the carpets quickly because, you know, blood sets in. So that we lifted her up, cleaned underneath her, put her back down.
That's like at the doctor's office. They just pull the carpet out, tear it off, there's a new one.
Well, I wish. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, that'd be awesome.
But no, there are no extra remotes. Don't ask.
That's why it's screwed into the wall.
The pointed... Oh, just slightly away from the TV, which needs it to be directly.
It's like screwed into the wall, pointed at the ceiling.
Yeah.
You have to go to the dollar store and buy a few mirrors so you can bounce the beam. So yeah, I just checked in. Is there a Dollar Tree anywhere in the neighborhood? Do you have Uber in this town?
Our gift shop has a series of mirrors, sir, and they're all available with suction cups in the back. So
you get your son to hold
the
screen up while you change the channel.
They start at $38.95. They've got the hotel's crest screen printed in the corner.
Oh my god, that's funny. Yeah, hotels are a crazy place to work. I've thought about going back there, but it's kind of like... It's like you move to the suburbs and then someone goes, would you be interested in moving back to this crack neighborhood? And you're like, yeah, I'm good. That's how I feel about hotels. Like, everything
you don't miss
bad...
the flavor?
No. It's not that I don't love it. It's almost like I went to rehab, and if I went to a hotel, I would get out of rehab. Like, I would be... My sponsor would be real mad at me. I'd be doing all the bad things.
Yeah.
Just because hotels, everything bad can happen. It's 24 hours, people have bedrooms, there's money available, there's shit to steal everywhere. Like, any possible thing. I've seen people, like, shoot each other. I've seen children fall off of balconies. I've seen people try to kill themselves. We've found dead bodies. Like, all sorts of insane shit. Like,
so Eric Clapton's
no, actually, I'll tell this story because it was weird, but we had a church group that had their church session. They didn't have a building, they just needed a room, and they would rent one of the rooms every Sunday afternoon, but they would never wrangle their children. So, like, they'd be having their church service, and all the kids of the people in church would just be running around the lobby. And we're like, get the fuck back into your room. Like, you cannot just hang out. And one girl got loose, and it's an Embassy Suites. So you know how, like, all the rooms are in a big atrium to a, like, you know, spot down in the middle that has a bunch of, you know, water features and shit. girl goes up three floors and then tries to climb down the edge into the water feature and falls and just bashes herself into a fountain. And it was terrible because it was like this horrible noise, a little kid scream. I was the manager on duty. I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, terrible.
Oh, they, you know, they bounce. They bounce. Like, they... Yeah, they're so lightweight. They don't really...
Well, the worst part was...
John Candy now? Ah, kids are resilient.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the worst part was the family...
A John Candy-sized person falling would be dead.
The family came and like, moved her. Like, we were like, we've called 911. Oh, no. Something's happening. And they're like, we're going to take her home. And we're like, no. No. You have to leave her alone because the police have to come.
Child blood on the water feature.
Well, yes, and also, like, it happened in our business, and you're not a guest in our business, so no, you have to stay. Because we need to reconcile this and then move forward. Like, you know, if it was a guest, you'd be like, let me take her back to the room. Okay, we can deal with that because you're close. But yeah, it's like, you're a stranger. You could leave in a car and then... 6 years from now, be like, I'm suing Embassy Suites for breaking my daughter's leg and it never got fixed. And it was like, well, you took her to a hospital. Maybe she could have been fine.
Still broken. Like, just dragging it around.
Oh, yeah, we were very nervous about it because it was like, oh, shit, what's going on?
I think it's starting to fuse. No, Sally, no. We got a court date next week. Crunch.
Terrible.
Daddy, no.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's tough. It's tough. It's tough making it in America.
I mean, yeah.
Well, just hotels are just a weird place. And you talk about people trashing them. People trashing hotel rooms is like the least thing to worry about. We can clean a hotel room. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's just like...
We have your credit card on file.
I wanted to get to that point where I just felt like I could.
Oh, like, yeah. Lots of rich people get away with
it. This
shit.
Is for me.
I like those.
You don't even sneak out. You just walk by. You're like, yeah, trashed it good. Check it out. Tell me the top three. I bet.
I let the paparazzi in.
I mean, the guy from Mario might be better, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd all like to be rich enough that we live above the law.
I've left like $15 because I don't want the maid to get mad that it smells like weed.
I've
like
left weed.
Yeah, no, there you go.
I've left weed tips too. I'm always like, man, no, they're cool.
There's a little note that just says, shh. It's okay. Just open a window.
Oh my God.
Like, I don't need to take this on the plane. I'll just leave it here.
Know that that entire hotel talked about you that day. Because when shit like that happens, it trickles fast to everyone. Everyone's on radios, and then the houseman and the housekeepers tell us about everything, and then the front desk and the F&B people will run into different rooms to see weird shit. Like, when something's trashed, it's actually best day at the hotel. Because they're like, hey, everyone, when you have a chance, go to 210. We're gonna clean that one last because it's terrible. And we're like, sweet! And we all go look at it, take pictures.
Does the weed go... to where it needs to go. If you leave weed behind, does it wind up with somebody who could use weed?
I mean, if the right person receives it, I definitely know people who would have thrown it away. But
they just toss it out, and they're like, but you know, that front desk person, they love weed.
Manager just keeps it to plant on, like, I don't know, his valet driver or something.
Yeah, I guess it was years ago. I was like, these days I feel like planting weed on somebody is kind of like nothing. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, but back in the day when I worked at hotels, yeah, it probably would have been a big deal.
Takes like the weed and makes hemp out of it.
You know what I love? What I love about motels in Texas are the Texas-shaped waffle irons.
Oh,
that
yeah.
They have with the free continental breakfast.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, not everywhere. You go to Chicago, you don't see near as much Texas stuff.
You don't.
It's weird.
And Illinois, not as interesting a shape.
Not as many state-shaped stuff everywhere, right?
It's almost like they don't remember the Alamo.
They don't know what shape their state is.
Yeah, you go to Kansas, there's just like rectangles everywhere.
Probably.
What's going on?
What's
that? Is that a glass Kansas? No, that's a window, idiot.
Imagine flying Florida Megan waffles in the shape of Florida. There's just this weird, like, oblong, just broken up, like, weird arm thing.
What about Hawaii?
A bunch of tiny.
Just dough balls. Fritters.
Oh, man. Thanks, JJ, for sitting and chatting with us. It's been fun.
When do we start recording? I bet I'm the first one, right?
Yep. Yep. Well, I mean, given the fact that I hit record in front of you, I can't imagine how you would know.
Yeah, three times.
Yeah, three different things. That's what's happening. It's tough out here in the podcasting world when you lose some shit. But thank you so much. When's your upcoming show? What's the next show that you have coming up?
I've got a panel show at Cold Town Theater. It's the Mondo Panorama on June 15th and June 29th. Both of them are Fridays at 11:30.
Hmm.
And they should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, they will.
And if they're not, it's going to make the audience feel like it's their fault.
If you go and you don't like it, it is your fault.
And this is trying out the sort of new...
Yeah, this is with the Armando awesome. Twist. Yeah,
I like it. I think that's a good twist. Awesome. I'm real excited.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming out. This was great. And yeah, Michelle, marry me.
Good luck with that.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Yes But Why podcast.